Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A lot of excitement. There's a tremendous fan base here with a lot of energy, a lot of passion. They love their team. And I'm just ready to get started. I've been in the office. Probably seems like it's been 24 hours just in the office around the clock, just making calls. But this is an area I'm familiar with, so it's fun to be home, so to speak.
Can you take us through when the end of your time at Cal, when it became the realization that you were going to be the next coach at Missouri? Who was the first person you called? Who was the first person you talked to? What was the process like when you finally decided this is where you wanted to be?
There were probably talks about at least a month that started. But now, to Mizzou's credit, nobody contacted me. Jim Sterk, anybody, they didn't contact me, and I thought that was great. So just focused on my team. It was probably distracting for my team at Cal because they were hearing things, but I never talked about it. I was focused on the job, and it wasn't like I was leaving the job. I was happy where I was at. But then it got to a point that I had to make a decision, and my wife and I, we sat down and weighed the pros and cons of making that decision, and Mizzou turned out to be the best situation for me, which I thought it was anyway, but I needed my wife to see that herself because it's hard to leave the Bay Area with that weather, you know, 65, 75 degrees every day, and just the culture, the diversity, the community. So all those things were great. And the first person I called outside of my wife and I making the decision, the first person I called was my mom. And she, you know, her biggest thing was just, I would love to have you here because she lives in St. Louis, but you have to do what's best for you. But she was so excited when it was official.
Here talking to new Missouri Tiger basketball coach Konzo Martin. We'll kind of go back and forth between family and kind of talking about the basketball point. I've done this enough. I'm only 28, but I've certainly done this enough to know that coaches certainly hear some of the criticisms. One of the criticisms placed on you has been job hopper. You've only been at your previous stops for only three seasons. But you said yesterday that this is home, or on Monday you said this is home. What can you say to Missouri fans to make them think that this is going to be a longer stay than your previous two stops?
Well, I can certainly say if Missouri wants to keep me or Mizzou wants to keep me, I'll be here for a long time. I think when you make moves, you look at the moves I've made. When you go from my first job at Missouri State, I didn't want to leave Purdue as an assistant coach, but Matt Penny, we talked, and the athletic director, Morgan Berg, it was just one of those deals. I couldn't pass up the opportunity to be at Missouri State. So after Missouri State, we had success. So you go from Missouri State to Tennessee. So I go to Tennessee, and after my third year, just felt like some things weren't right, more so from a family standpoint. So I want to do what's best for my family. So had an opportunity to go to Cal, and it was a great place, a great 3 years there. But I don't know if I ever felt like Cal was my final destination, and not that I was looking for jobs, because I've never made a call to anybody to seek a job. So when this opportunity presented itself, I felt like this is the opportunity. I prayed, and God blessed me to be at a place where I think I can be for a long time if they're willing to keep me. But I don't get consumed with that because it was a legitimate question to ask. But everywhere I've gone for a reason. I've left for a reason. So it's not a case of just leaving. Let me try something different. But on the flip side of that, we can't lose sight of this is always business. As tough as this thing is, it's always business, because I'd rather have an opportunity to leave and be blessed to leave, as opposed to losing a job. And that's a tough, tough thing to deal with. So I'm grateful for every stop I've had, and I've built great relationships. But it's a legitimate question to ask, though.
We talk about coming home. One thing I was excited about, your ties to the area. We'll kind of get into that here. I read a lot about you over the last 12 hours or so. The place you grew up, The Hole. For people that for people that aren't familiar with their story, can you summarize it for them?
Well, East St. Louis, and for those that don't know, East St. Louis is on the Illinois side. So basically when you cross the Mississippi River, so you're St. Louis, Missouri, and you cross the river, it's on the East St. Louis, Illinois. Some say it's a tough area, it's a tough environment. But growing up in it, you don't realize it's tough because that's your home. I was exposed to a lot at a young age. I've seen a lot as a young guy. You know, I give you the prime example. I went off to college and blessed to have success. I went to Purdue, blessed to play in the NBA, did a lot of different things. And on the flip side, my brother, who's 2 years old, spent 10 years in prison. You know, so and we grew up in the same house, so he's a wonderful guy, but just situations we got caught up in. Then you look at my two sisters, both of them have, one has a master's, one has a PhD, so that's just the world we live in. And but I'm grateful to be standing here. But East St. Louis, my home. Jackie Joyner, who's one of my best friends to this day. She was older than us, but she kind of raised us. So it's a beautiful place. But you know, seen a lot, seen some tough times. But one thing about it, the people in East St. Louis, they stick together.
When you go through your story and you read about it, it is like the great American story. Kid lives in the inner city, through sports, accomplishes great things, finally gets his dream job, and is stable. Do you ever kind of sit back and think, man, like, how did all this happen to me just given where I came from? Because we all know the numbers that people from those kind of areas, they're not supposed to have the kind of success that you have.
I don't, because I just feel like I can never let up, and I'm a firm believer, and I'm not touching on anybody else's religion, but I believe in God 100%, and I feel that. So all these opportunities, I'm grateful to understand that, but I also know it could be somebody else with this opportunity. So I don't take it for granted. I never felt like anything was owed to me, because anybody can be in these shoes. So I cherish every moment. I work as hard as I can work, and I let the chips fall where they may. But I also understand there's a big picture in life, and you have to appreciate life, appreciate people, and applaud the great opportunities, and learn from those painful situations. And I've had a lot of pain, ups and downs in my life, but I try to learn those lessons and continue to push forward, and hopefully I can give some of that back to our young men and women.
What kind of challenge was it having a mother that was so young, that had so many other responsibilities to take care of, and then, like, not fully being adult, but she has those responsibilities?
As a youth, you don't realize the challenges because you're just a kid trying to find your way. You feel like you had everything you need as long as you're playing your sports. But as I got older, in those 14 to, you know, 17 years, sort of things that we didn't have. And again, that's where my brother took a different path. The hard part, and we laugh about it, I'll give you a couple examples. We didn't have a, you know, wash and dry in the home. So what we would do, and again, we laugh about it to this day, so I'll give you, your listeners, an opportunity to laugh. But we would wash our clothes in the bathtub. You know, we'd kind of wash our pants in there, and then we'd wring them out together. And then you iron your clothes, and it's so cold with water in them. It's just, you walk to class, and you walk to school in the morning, smoke coming from your pants. It's just, and again, we laugh about those things today, but you appreciate those things. But my mom, she worked at a bar at night. And during the day, she worked at, I think it's the Mayflower Hotel downtown St. Louis. She was a maid there whenever she had opportunities. But again, we just, when you're in that area, the great thing about that, I weren't embarrassed, I don't think, because most of the kids in the project house when we grew up in lived the same way. So it wasn't as if you saw a kid that lived in a mansion and you lived a certain way. So we all kind of had the same upbringing. So, you know, some might have a little more than others, but it wasn't as bad as, people would think.
Here talking to Missouri's basketball coach, Konzo Martin, I was reading a story about how your mom wouldn't let you accept basketball shoes from the people in the neighborhood, didn't want you to get run up with the wrong crowd. How often did that happen?
All the time. What happened was, again, it was tough because I never had a pair of Air Jordans throughout my high school. The first pair of Air Jordans I had, I might have had the first pair when I was in college, I mean, maybe years later, the first pair of Jordans that ever came out, but I never had a pair of Jordans. So what happened, high school team, you're playing games, and the shoe company Puma had the shoes, so we wore the Puma shoes. So I'm out there with a pair of Pumas, and my teammates got Air Jordans on. But I think those things, and my mom telling me, just take your time. I know it, and it's hard for a young guy. You're sitting at 16, 17 years old, you're playing, and the other guys have those certain shoes on. Your mom said, it'll be okay, just trust, it'll be okay. Well, that's really hard when you got guys you grew up with that are making $100,000 in a week or $100,000 in a couple of days, and they got, you know, all these things, and you have to fight every day to say, well, I'm going to stay on the straight and narrow. That's a hard, hard thing to do. And to this day, though, I don't owe anybody anything from the standpoint of taking stuff from guys or, you know, cutting deals on the backside. So therefore, my reputation is intact from that standpoint, because oftentimes you see guys that make decisions at that age, they pay for them later in life because there's so many people that they owe in the wrong way. But again, I just think outside of my mom, she was young. She didn't know. She just didn't want me to be in harm's way. But I think it was God at the end of the day.
Your father was in and out of your life. That's something I can definitely relate to. And I think the hardest part to get over in that situation is accepting who he is and realizing that he's just not always going to be in your life and coming to grips with that. What was that like as a kid to kind of be struggling in your situation, your father in and out of your life, and then as you get older and have success, to kind of embrace him as you have?
Well, that's a good question, and I hope a lot of young boys and girls are listening to this, because what happened, my dad wasn't around, but I can say again, I will say this, and this is 100% truth, and my mom never said a bad word about him, ever. She never said a bad word about him. We didn't have any money. She never got child support. She never applied for child support. She fought to make ends meet, but she's never to this day said a bad word about him. And to this day, they have a great relationship, because my mom has a good heart. In my opinion, he was a good guy. Now, stuff happens. I can't speak on what happened or didn't happen, but I have a great relationship with him to this day, because I fought to build a relationship with him. I more or less hunted him down when I was in college. When I was in high school, he came around a little bit. When I got out of college, I went looking for him. I know where to find him. We have a great relationship to this day because of the fact that my mom didn't beat him up to me physically or mentally, talking about him in a negative way. So our relationship was great. I can't speak on what happened in a relationship when they were younger. Stuff happens. But because of how she talked about him in a positive manner, my relationship was great with him today. And she just said, you can't spend a lot of time hating somebody or letting somebody eat you up inside, because it takes away from the good things that you have to offer in life. So I've never been a guy that hate and have that type of pain, because life is too short, and I was diagnosed with cancer at 26 years old, so I know the feeling. So the last thing I want to do is hold a grudge or have ill feelings towards someone if I can control the outcome.
What was hearing from the doctor that you have cancer?
They did tests and x-rays. To kind of rewind, when I was in Italy playing, I sprinted to half court and I passed out. And they took me back to the training room. And the trainer, he couldn't speak any English, but what he was saying, he used gestures with his hands. He was trying to say, you were big when you came over here, but now you're small. Because I went from like 215, I think, to like one, at that time it was 185, somewhere around there. So in a span of 4 months, 4.5 months, I lost a lot of weight. So they did a lot of tests and x-rays when I was in Italy. And then the owner of the team, and there was about six guys, there's one American guy on the team outside of myself, and there was five other guys that went to college in the United States, but they could speak fluent English, even though they were Italian. And all those guys, they were saying, you need to get back to the States right away. Call me when you get there. We'll be praying for you. What they did, they said, we think it's bronchitis. That's what they said when I was in Italy. And maybe they said that to not scare me. But so the next day we flew back to Indianapolis, where I was living, and so it was probably 1:15 or something like that when we got to the house. My wife and I, my son Joshua was 4.5 months old, so we walk in the house, and I had Joshua in my hand, and luckily we had a couch right by the door. We walk in, I just kind of fell to the couch and had Joshua, got him on the couch right away, and then my wife went back into the room because she had some bags, and she saw me laying there on the couch, and I just said, we need to get to the hospital right away, because I couldn't breathe. So we went to the hospital in Indianapolis. It might have been, 130, 145, somewhere around there. And they did a lot of tests and x-rays. So I would imagine 215, 230 in the morning, the doctor, I remember his face. I don't remember his name. And my wife and my son Joshua were sitting in a chair. And he was talking to me, and he said, I don't know if you're going to die, but this is life-threatening. And I just I glanced at my wife quickly. And I looked away because I could see her eyes, and I just kind of wanted to be strong for her. So it was really tough. What they found was they found a mass in my chest area about the size of a baseball. So I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which is a form of cancer. So I had to go through chemotherapy for about 4.5 months. And my last checkup and treatment was April the 20th of 98. So I've been cancer-free since 98.
I imagine, I've never been in this situation, so I can only assume here. I can assume when you get in that situation, death is one of those things like no one wants to come to grips with, because we know it's going to happen at some point, but no one wants to think about them dying. Are you more afraid about that part, or are you more afraid about leaving your wife and kids behind?
Well, the thing that I prayed about, I think it was a real fear of the unknown. That's what I felt like it was. It just, man, I don't know if I'll be here tomorrow. So that was the fear. I love the Lord, and I felt like I've studied and lived the life the right way. But so I just prayed to God. I said, just allow me to see my son till he turns 18, and then whatever happens after that happens. Now Joshua, he's 19. He's a freshman at Purdue. And again, I just. It was tough because my wife, I think I might have been 26, she was 24. You have a four-month-old son at the time. And I'm just like, man, it was really tough to deal with. It was tough to go through. I think the toughest part for me in going through that, when you go to the oncology office, and we started out, there were probably, 20, 22 people as we started. When I left the oncology office, there might have been 7 or 8 people. So obviously the other ones didn't make it. And I just, again, it's, so when you talk about a sport, and everybody wants to win, and it's at a high level, that's more important, and that's what's real to me. I think you're in for a fun and excitement, a team that plays, try to play as hard as they can play, because our goal is always to be the toughest team on the floor, the toughest team in the league. Those are the things we talk about, to defend, to always try to defend, to rebound, and play hard. Offense, we play according to our personnel. Our best players score the ball, shooters shoot the ball. We like to play, but play good basketball. You know, oftentimes people always say the right way. I mean, everybody has a different style, so what is the right way? For us, it's really trying to take care of the basketball, to have fun, to have a passion for your teammate, and have a willingness, because oftentimes these are things that we don't talk about. You talk about sharing the ball, doing this, but have a willingness and a passion to see your teammate be successful. If he's a great player, then applaud his greatness, and whatever your role is, be great in that role. But, you know, I take it a step further. For me in coaching, the hard part, I think, nowadays is helping young men understand their role in order for the team to be successful. My college coach, Gene Cady, told me my role. Set screens, a freshman. Set screens, rebound, play defense, period. I don't need you shooting the ball. So nowadays, it's almost as if you have to tiptoe around those things and helping guys understand that. But I think when you do that, you lose your team, you lose credibility, and eventually you lose those players because of that. So I've always tried to be honest with our guys, to have a great relationship. Most of our guys, I like to think they know I love them, not just as basketball players, but as people, and we have lifetime relationships. I'll give you a prime example. Robbie Humble, Etwan Moore, Juwan Johnson, those are guys we started with at Purdue as an assistant coach. I have a great relationship with those guys, and that's what it's about for me. One of my best players, one of my favorite players of all time I've ever coached, Kyle Williams from Topeka, he called it Top City. I mean, one of my favorite. He did a great job at Missouri State Force. He's like family to me. And that's what it's about for me at the end of the day, because at some point this will all end. But what do you have to show for when that ball stops bouncing?
You and I talked about before we started this interview, I'm a big Missouri Tiger fan, and I don't want to now have you on here. And I guess just keep all praise and not at least address some of the criticisms and questions that I had about the hire. I liked the hire. I didn't love the hire for this reason. I want to just ask you about it. You talk about defense and all of that, and that is a great thing to have. I guess one of the big criticisms about your team has been offensively and how they've produced in terms of offensive efficiency. Do you think that's something, I guess, in your scheme that's going to change? Do you think you've hit your ceiling in terms of coaching offense?
No, I think we'll be better. I think the biggest key offense, you want to flow with the offense. But I think for us, I spend more time early in the season on defense, defending, rebounding, playing hard. Offensively, it's more about personnel, having guys to play. You watch a guy like Jaylen Brown who played for us at Cal, a guy that scored the ball. So you want to be able to score and open that thing up. But I think it's more than anything, it's getting the personnel to do that, because when you open the game up and you're trying to score 80 or 90 points a game, then you have to be good defensively. So, of course, we'll continue to improve offensively. Great question.
Do you think sometimes when you kind of get, if you are in a certain school of thought, Norm Stewart, Gene Cady, they coach a certain kind of way, do you think that maybe detracts you from playing a more wide-open kind of style of basketball?
Sometimes, because of the thought process, I always go back to my style of being with Gene Cady and under Gene Cady. But those are the things that you work toward early in the season to give your guys opportunity to do that. Like one of the things we did at Cal this year, we tried to open up more early. We had a lot of turnovers early. So what happens as a coach, you don't want to consistently turn the ball over. So you want to be able to take care of the basketball. I think those are the biggest key, being able to take care of the basketball when you open it up.
One concern that I do have, you talk about Jaylen Brown. You had a lottery pick. You had Ivan Rabb. You lost in the first round of the tournament. That I think some people could make the assessment, Konzo Martin is great at getting talent. Can he coach talent above their ability and get over that hump? Do you think that's a fair criticism about your coaching so far?
Oh, that's fine. I mean, but when you look at it, you look at Ivan Rabb and Jaylen Brown, but you take a step further. And then that game, Tyrone Wallace, who I started point guard, and Jabari Burr, I started two guard. Neither one of those guys played in the game. Now, you can sit there and say, well, you could win the game without those guys. Well, Ivan and Jalen were two wing guys. So now you lose your starting point, your starting two. And if you ask anybody, in most cases, you got a chance to win big if you got good guard play.
What have you learned in your coaching time so far? This is now a stable place, I guess, to get you over that hump. You've only got to the second weekend one time. What have you learned in your previous two stops now that you're going to be stable and plant your roots here that helps you feel like you can take that next step in coaching?
Well, I think the biggest key, you have to be good on both ends of the floor. You look at teams now when you get into that Sweet 16, you have to be good on both ends of the floor. You have to obviously defend, rebound, and play hard. You got to have a go-to guy that can make plays, demand a double team, have a presence to him. I think all those things kind of, as you watch teams now in the tournament play, you got to have good guard play. But I think you got to have a go-to guy, and you got to be able to do it on both ends of the floor.
Present-day Missouri Tigers, we're talking to new coach Konzo Martin. What's your process in evaluating the last 3 years of Missouri basketball?
Well, again, it's hard to be specific because I wasn't in the office, in the staff meetings, and in the recruiting process with the guys, so I can't answer that part. But I think when you talk about it, I like to think from afar. I thought they competed. I thought they competed as a team. But I think when you win eight SEC games, there's a lot of work to be done. And I thought, in my opinion, Kim took over a tough situation, and I thought he handled it with a lot of respect and a lot of dignity. Again, it's a tough thing to deal with. You make it work as a coach. And what happens in recruiting, when you're trying to recruit good players, when they see a lot of question marks or when they hear NCAA, hear sanctions, it can discourage a lot of guys. So now all of a sudden you're trying to build a program and you can't get some of those guys, and I think that part is tough. But I think from a coaching standpoint, I felt like Kim knew what he's doing as a coach and all that, but it's hard to understand really what took place if I wasn't behind the scenes.
Do you meet with each individual player over the next week or so, or are you just kind of focused in, man, this team's been bad over the last couple years, I know I can recruit, I need to try to bring four or five new guys in here or try to get us back to where we need to be for next season?
Yes, I have three meetings left with the guys, so I've met with everybody except three guys, so those will finish up today. But meet with them as a team, but I meet with them individually just to talk about their plans, their future, their expectations, and then we kind of go from there.
Is there any information you can give fans, I guess, on a timetable in which your assistant coaches will be done?
I would imagine here in the next 2 weeks. I don't think it'll get past 2 weeks because what happens, out of respect for my current guys at Cal that are looking for jobs as far as assistant coaches, trying to be head coaches or coming this way, and also the current staff here at Mizzou, just kind of meeting with these guys, getting a feel for them. So I'll do all those things today as well. So I would imagine hopefully in the next, at least, no, it shouldn't go any longer than 2 weeks.
Last question here for new Missouri basketball coach Konzo Martin. He's been gracious with his time today. As a Missouri Tiger fan, what are realistic expectations for next year, given I understand how bad the last 3 years have been, and I'm sure we'll have a different conversation hopefully in a couple weeks with some big things on the horizons. What do you think in year one is a realistic expectation for fans of the Missouri Tigers?
And I'm not trying to dodge the question. I think what happens is when you finish off recruiting, and I can answer that question better because we can call back when we talk later. So it's hard to answer until I get that part finished and complete. But also just really getting a feel for the league, because you can gauge the league and kind of say, okay, this guy's a good player. He has this guy coming in, get a better feel that way. But it's really hard to say. But I think we could be a good team if we get some pieces to fall in place. Now, whether you're talking about winning the tournament or winning the conference, no, I don't know that part until we get all the parts in place, because there's still so many unknowns.
Well, Coach, I will say this. I know we can't talk too much about it. I hope that you and I talk in a couple of weeks because something really great for the Missouri Tiger program has happened. Hey, I kept you way too long. I appreciate your time. Let's do this again.
No, thank you for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.